Well, it is Friday, which means you've got questions, we've got answers, but today's show is unique, coming your way from the Philippines.
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, Michael Brown. It is great to be with you. Traveled about 40 hours from my house over to Davao in the Philippines, where we are at a gathering of our Southeastern Asian fire missionaries, and others have come in to join us, grads that are serving around the world. And in my hotel room, just arrived here a little while ago, we've got a bunch of folks packed into my hotel room. So just everybody say hello.
Hey.
All right. So real quick, let's just go around our little gathering here. This is a representative sampling of our fire missionaries serving around the world and now gathering together in the Philippines. So real quick, first name and how long you've been here.
My name is Trent, and I've been here for 3 years.
My name's Kevin, and I've lived in the Philippines 11 years.
My name is Leanne, and I've lived in Ukraine for 11 years.
My name's Eric McCoy, and I've been here for 3 years.
Wait. Notice everyone else, first name only, but he wanted to distinguish himself from the following Eric. We could have just had two Erics, but that's so everyone knows Eric McCoy. All right, just so you all know that. How long have you been here, Eric?
3 years.
3 years.
And I'm Eric Miller, and I've been here 11 years.
I'm Tony. I've been here 3 years in the Philippines.
Sierra Miller. I've been here 11 years.
All right. Sierra, I want to start with you. You've been here 11 years, but how old are you now?
16.
All right. So you've spent most of your life in the Philippines on the mission field. Amazing. Kevin, what brought you here? You've been here 11 years. How long have you been married?
I've been married 14 years.
14 years. Kids?
Three.
And how old are they?
11.
I know it's hard. I know it's like three kids.
11, yeah. 11, 12, and 13.
11, 12, and 13. So you count it the reverse way. So they've basically spent all their lives or almost their lives, entire lives in the mission field. How did you get to the Philippines?
It basically was the call of the Lord on my life. I was actually felt that I was going to Africa, and a group of missionaries that had already gotten together asked me to pray about coming to the mission field in the Philippines. And I was like, oh, we're not going to the Philippines. We're going to Africa. But I did. I committed it to prayer for about 8 months. And then God spoke to me and said, go to the Philippines. And that's where it all started.
Now, what's unique is that my previous two personal assistants, Trent and Eric, not Miller, but Eric McCoy, as he wanted everyone to know, they were called away from serving in North Carolina where we were and called over here to the Philippines. So what we're going to do, we're going to have kind of a unique fun. You've got questions, we've got answers today, and we're going to do it all in-house with our folks from the Philippines. So I'm going to be asking them questions. And again, we're in the Philippines, but we have other missionaries here. Where else do folks come from? So you've come from Ukraine. Liam, where else do we have folks?
China.
Some from China.
Tanzania.
Right.
Anywhere else? And some come over from the States just to be here. But I'm going to be asking them some questions. By the way, Bible questions, testing your theological knowledge, seeing how solid – no, I'm messing with you – how solid you are in the mission field. And then they're going to be asking me questions, and we kind of opened it up for whatever they want to ask about. But let me just say this to you. On the one hand, I'm sitting in a room filled with exceptional people, with people who are going for it, with people on the front lines. Tony, you're living out in rural areas, so once a week you come in, spend a day getting groceries and things. We've got folks stretched out going for it. Leanne's been pioneering amazing ways in Ukraine for years. I come in here and see some babies, and I realize they don't belong to anybody here. Filipino babies that are now being housed in orphanages that are folks you guys have started. So on the one hand, I'm sitting in a room filled with exceptional people. On the other hand, these are just regular people. These are men and women, young people, older people, nobody's like ancient like me yet, but who just said, hey, we want to go for it and make a difference. So whoever you are, wherever you live, if you give yourself unconditionally to God, He can use you to be a world changer. We'll be right back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, it is Friday. You've got questions, we've got answers, but a special broadcast from the Philippines. I traveled about 40 hours to be here. And as the trip was going on, I just couldn't wait to be here with some precious friends and family members, not physical family members, but spiritual family members, part of our FIRE community that have been sent out around the world, and we've gathered together. Last time we were going to do a regional retreat, the dollar collapsed, the Asian dollar collapsed, and folks just weren't able to make it, but we have really been looking forward to coming here. We've got, five of our FIRE leaders that have come to join together. So once more, we got a whole bunch of folks crowded into my makeshift radio studio here in the Philippines. So just everybody, real quick.
Hi.
All right, now this is just a small sample. How many do we have here total? Do you know, people? How many?
Close to
40. Close to 40 plus kids? How many kids? It's like 400. The kids are swarming everywhere. All right, so we're doing kind of a unique, you've got questions, we've got answers. I've got some questions for the missionaries, and then they're going to ask me some questions. We don't know what those questions will be, and I see some mischievous looks in some of their eyes. But let me ask this, and I need one of you to jump in quickly. What do you think is the biggest misconception about what it means to be a missionary? Your average person in a church involved on some level, and they think, missionary. What do you think is one of the biggest misconceptions or the biggest misconception that comes to mind? And any of you, just jump in, but go for it.
I think most people believe that if you're going to be a missionary, you have to go and live in like a mud hut in Africa somewhere, and you have to live in these really impoverished conditions. And they don't realize that that's not always the case.
But you guys, I mean, you live differently than you would, yes, in America.
Definitely.
But you're saying, okay, so missionary does not just mean going out to tribal people with bones in their nose and you have to duck the spears as they're shooting it. Some missionaries do that.
Right.
But definitely. That's, okay, what else? What's another misconception?
For our families, I think their biggest concern is the danger of being in a different country like the Philippines, just not the unknown is what the biggest fear is.
Yeah, and you know, if you can't even though people speak English here, they don't speak English so much in Ukraine, but still you can't communicate fully in English, especially as you go out into more tribal areas. So when culture is different, that can be unnerving. By the way, about the most dangerous place on the planet, and aside from Middle East right now, was probably Chicago.
Right.
July 4th weekend, they had 14 deaths and gun shootings and over 80 people wounded. Wow. Safer to be in Afghanistan as a soldier than in certain parts of Chicago. What else? What other misconceptions?
I think that people think you have to be a pastor or worship leader, that's the only type of missions work you could do. There's many things that missionaries can do where it doesn't have to be just church-based ministry.
What else? What other misconceptions? Well, Trent, let's ask this. You came over here to work with a company that has a base in the States, but it was basically a business link to do missions. So explain that before we talk about the gym stuff. Explain that.
Well, essentially, it's trying to reach people not through the traditional way of church, but actually trying to reach people from a business perspective by employing people, giving them a job. And then through that, we preach the gospel and we work into the community through that particular way.
Have you seen fruit from that?
Yes, we have. We've seen fruit. We've actually most recently just baptized. We started a separate company, CrossFit, which you know about, but we've actually baptized two people, and our doors have been open for less than a year. So,
all right, and CrossFit. So this is a gym. It's kind of like a cult-like following in America, but just, you know, for fitness and so on. So you started that.
Yeah.
You started CrossFit. Now you have two of them?
We have two locations here in Davao City.
All right, and how many members total?
We have about 400 people that are a part of both boxes.
All right, so what's that got to do with the gospel?
Well, that's a way into the community, and that's typically a missionary's most challenging aspect, is a way to dive into the community and become part of the community so that you can not only have a message, but you'll have an opportunity to start changing lives.
And you're seeing people come to faith through that.
We are. We're seeing salvations. We're seeing people recognize the difference between lifestyle. It's an opportunity for them to see the kingdom of God in motion, and not just in a church environment, but in a different type of environment.
And then you've even been magazines, TV, because of this somehow. So you've gotten this unexpected platform.
It has. It's really taken a huge success turn. We've been on TV twice. We've been in magazines, newspapers. We've hit almost every local media that there is.
Amazing. All right, so I just want to go around the room here. Again, Michael Brown coming your way from the Philippines right now with a representative sampling of some of our fire missionaries who are serving around the world. And I just want to remind you, all of you who support our ministry, all of you who are torchbearers, who give one time gifts, the first fruits of the money that comes into our ministry, we sow back into some of our missionaries around the world. So I just want you to know, if you pray for us, if you stand with us financially, that all the fruit you're going to hear about today, you're part of that. You get to share in that reward. So just to go around the group here again, this is just representative sampling. Real quick, we heard some of what you're doing, Trent. And then I want to find out what each of you are doing, just the main work that you're involved with. But you've also generated income through this now that you're putting back into feeding children and getting them educated, correct?
That's exactly right. We're actually creating enough revenue now that we're actually able to invest in ministry opportunities such as feeding programs, and we're actually starting a church as well.
All right. Kevin, you guys have been stretched out with a whole bunch of things. What are the main things that you're involved with?
Well, I'm involved with CrossFit as well. Trent and I started it together, and it's just an amazing platform to see people on a constant basis. Whereas in church, you may only see people on a Sunday or a Wednesday, we get to see these CrossFitters, you know, every day of the week.
And you do Bible studies there and things?
We do Bible studies. We share our lives. You know, the gospel's simple. It's basically let your light shine to the world, and Christ is that light. And so that's what we do in CrossFit. Wherever we go, that's the DNA of Christ is in us, and we just try to splatter paint people with the DNA of the gospel, and by talking with them, communing with them, hanging out with them, and working out with them. And so that's been a great platform to share the gospel of Jesus Christ to this nation and a different rim of people, because here you have really low class, you have upper class, and so we get to hit a different class of people. Whereas in other ministries that I have, it's more to people in the mountains. So I've helped plant two churches in a place called Melita, or just outside Melita.
How rural is it?
Very rural. No running water, no electricity, one of the areas. The other area is a church that has electricity, has water, but it's a place next to the beach. So no roads, anything. Most people use motorcycles to get around. Mm. You can't really use vehicles very much there.
Yeah. So that's quite a difference from the city and the CrossFit clientele to the rural areas in the mountains. Leanne, Ukraine, it's been an amazing journey. You're in the midst of all kinds of social upheaval there.
Yes.
Wow. So what have you been doing in recent years and currently?
Well, our main focus in the Ukraine has been working with local pastors and churches, helping see them have healthy, strong churches, not just big numbers, but quality of ministry. And I do a lot of preaching, teaching, discipleship training, counseling, and then we also do a lot of children ministry. In the summer, we have kids camps that we do. And then during the school year, we're doing Bible studies with orphans who have graduated from the orphanage, and they're living in college dormitories. And every week we have at least four different Bible studies in four different dorms.
And now, by the way, if you hear some sound outside, we're in a no smoking part of the hotel. But I don't know if there's some wedding party or something going out outside the door, and they're smoking. So these smoke alarms are going off. So this is we are in the Philippines, and. How epidemic is the orphanage problem there in Ukraine?
Well, interestingly enough, there was about 200,000 orphans. And then in the last year and a half, the Ukrainian government decided that they didn't want to have orphanages anymore. It was a stain on the nation to be known as having orphans, so they closed all the orphanages. They went to a foster care system. And so, I mean, now we don't know much about the orphans. There's only a few left in boarding schools, a few left in rehabilitation centers, but the orphans are, we only know the older ones now that are in the colleges.
Got it. And you've been working with them for a long time.
Yes.
All right, we've just added another person to our entourage here. So, Krista, we just need you to speak up. How long have you been here in the Philippines now?
Just over 3 years.
Just over 3 years. Now, Krista came over with Beth. The two of them were our key workers in our school of ministry. So we're I'm losing my personal assistants. We're losing some of our key school staff, but it's good. We're glad to lose them to the mission field. We come back. Sarah, I want to ask you about what it's like growing up on the field, because I remember you as a very little girl. Now you're a young woman. You've been on missions trips with your dads. I want to talk about that. And it's going to be time for our fire missionaries to put their toughest, most important questions to me on this special Friday from the Philippines. We promised you a special broadcast. When we come back, I also want to tell you about an amazing resource that we're going to make available to you. Make sure you visit the website, Ask Dr. Brown. That's askdrbrown.org, and check for latest articles, latest audio, latest video. And friends, I remind you, together, we are making a difference. God of light,
hear our cry, send the fire. It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey friends, welcome back to the Line of Fire. Michael Brown in Davao in the Philippines, about 40 hours from my door to the hotel. No, if you to the hotel, about 41 hours from when I left. And I'm here with a sampling of our team. Come on, guys. Yeah, we squeezed everybody into my hotel room and set up a makeshift radio studio. It's actually pretty impressive. We'll have to get someone to take a video of it so you can see what's actually happening here. And we're doing an unusual, you've got questions, we've got answers. I've been asking our missionaries questions, and in a moment they're going to ask me some questions. We're going to have some fun here today on the broadcast. But Sierra, you're 13. And you
16.
Sorry, 16. As I'm saying 13, I'm thinking you don't look 13. 16. But you've been here for 11 years of your life. Now, I have friends who are missionaries, and kids of missionaries often excel in unusual ways because you grow up in different culture, you grow up around different language, things like that. So tell me, in your opinion, as a 16-year-old young woman, What's the best part about growing up in a foreign country on the mission field?
I get to be exposed to different cultures and see what it's like for different people. Because there's so many cultures around the world, I can pick out the good and bad in either of them. And yeah, it's really cool.
All right. What would you say are challenges? I mean, you spent most of your life here, so it's not like you were 18 when you came over here. But you've been back to the States some. Are there any challenges growing up in a foreign country?
Well, sometimes the challenges is trying to figure out, like, I'm from America, but I live in the Philippines, so it feels kind of weird. I feel a pull in both directions because I have family in America, but I've lived in the Philippines for most of my life.
And you've been on missions trips with your dad, been to Japan?
Yes.
All right, so what's in your heart as a missionary kid now, a young woman? What do you feel about taking the gospel to the nations?
Well, I have a nation in particular I want to go to. I've started learning the language, and God's been showing me different things. I'd like to do ministry there one day.
Cool. Are you going to tell us what country or no?
Japan.
All right. Awesome. Oh, okay. Now, the opportunity you've been waiting for weeks, for months, where you guys get to ask me some questions. And we are one big family, so we're having some fun here. But who's going to go first with, it can be any kind of question. It can be Bible, it can be personal, it can be random. But just remember, if it's a stupid question, the whole world, most of the populated world, a whole lot of people will hear the stupid question. So it can be any question, but you want to distinguish yourself by the quality of the question. So raise your hand who's going to go first. So come on. Okay, Leanne, go ahead.
Okay, I have a question for you, Dr. Brown, from the Bible. In Matthew, after the Lord's Prayer, when Jesus is talking and he says, if you don't forgive others, then your Father in heaven will not forgive you. How do you interpret that? Do you interpret that God is saying he doesn't forgive you and you're going to lose your salvation? Or what exactly does Jesus mean?
That comes up a lot because in hyper grace camp, that's one of the verses they say, see, that doesn't apply to us because that would mean God withheld forgiveness, but we're forgiven at the cross. What we need to understand is that it's not a matter of salvation. It's a matter of relationship. Mm-hmm. And obviously someone could theoretically harden their heart to the point where they walk away from the Lord and deny Jesus. But I just understand that relationally. That let me back up and say this. Let's say you have this scenario where someone's a believer and they leave a church service and they get angry at somebody and they yell at them and then they get in their car and they're not paying attention. They crash the car and die. And they die with that sin unconfessed. Do they go to hell? Well, of course not. In other words, it's not if I committed a single sin, do I go to hell for that? And for someone to live like that, that's ridiculous pressure to think like that. It could be that when you meet the Lord, that first moment, you know, you feel funny because of what happened, you know. But in point of fact, the forgiveness that we get as believers is within the context of relationship. So that's purely a relational thing. It's not forgiveness for salvation. And in fact, when Jesus was talking to Jews at that time in the Sermon on the Mount, they didn't really have a clear concept just of individual salvation as clearly as we have it since the cross. So it's just relational. That if I refuse to forgive others, on some level, there's some breach in my relationship with God, some lack of forgiveness extended to me on a personal level. And that's why forgiveness is important, not just for the other person, but for us ourselves. Next question. All right, Trent, go ahead.
Okay, my question is specifically in regards to your expertise in Jewish apologetics. You have a little bit of experience there?
Okay.
Yeah, okay. So that was supposed to be funny, but anyway. So when I searched the Old Testament, there are over 300 plus prophecies spoken about the coming Messiah. Is that right?
Well, all right. That's commonly said. In other words, you'll often hear that, and people will say it in Jewish apologetics or just Christian outreach, and they'll say the odds of anyone fulfilling all of those would be like the state of Texas is stacked with, you know, quarters 10 feet high, and on the first pick, you pick the right one that's marked.
Exactly.
But it's misleading because a lot of the prophecies you wouldn't recognize as a prophecy until you look back at it. In other words, a lot of the prophecies are something happened in the life of David, and that foreshadows what happened with the Messiah. Or it happened in the life of Moses, and that foreshadowed what happened with the Messiah. So I'd rather look at the overall thrust of what the Old Testament says, and then look at Jesus and look back and say, who was that? As opposed to come up with this mathematical argument that there are 300. Because you could debate, okay, how do you know that's messianic in and of itself?
Right.
And it's not always so clearly laid out. So if that... Did that take the steam out of your question?
No, oh, okay. Actually. Well, I've actually traveled with you and seen you debate rabbis. And one of the things that I guess is just hard for me to understand is that if there are, Jesus clearly did fulfill these prophetic things that were spoken about the coming Messiah, why is it so hard then for the Jewish community to see Jesus as the Messiah?
Yeah, well, of course, that's five volumes and 1,500, and I've got like a minute. Okay, one thing
it's
is
difficult. Right?
One thing is they don't necessarily believe what's written in the New Testament. So you could say someone just made that up to make it look like it fit. Secondly, you could say, well, what about the prophecies he didn't fulfill? When the Messiah comes, there's peace on earth. Is there peace on earth? No. Well, when the Messiah is supposed to birth this new community, look at church history. How could that be the new community? Or if the Messiah is really the Messiah, then how come Christians don't keep the law? Or how can they believe that a man is God, etc.? So there's still going to be other things. So we have to be able to respond to the larger issues. In fact, I've just got a minute, but one of the biggest questions that comes up always is the question of the Holocaust. And Christian anti-Semitism paved the way in Europe for the Holocaust to happen. I agonized over this answer for many, many weeks, and when I wrote in volume one of my series, I wrote about the Holocaust and a redemptive answer for the Holocaust. It's been reprinted as a mini book by Jews for Jesus. It's a terrific read, and it's a great outreach tool, and it's yours for your gift of any size. So stand with us. Help us as we are on the front lines, literally around the world and on the front lines of Jewish ministry. You want to get this. And for your gift of any size, call 1-800-278-9978. That's 1-800-278-9978. Once more, 1-800-278-9978. Your gift of any size, whatever you're able to do to stand with us, we are making a difference. And one more time, just a little shout out from our folks in the Philippines here. All right, so special edition of You've Got Questions, We've Got Answers, coming your way straight from Davao in the Philippines.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back, friends, to The Line of Fire and our makeshift radio studio in Davao in the Philippines with some of our team that's here. Yay! All right, notice they're getting louder each time. That's because we're getting more. All right, so how many do we have in the room now? Start from me. One, two, three, four. Nine?
Yes.
All right, nine plus me. So we're, and we may get more squeezing in. Mike, how long have you been in the Philippines now?
Overall, back and forth for 12 years.
Back and forth for 12 years. All right, real quick, let's just find out what the rest of you are doing here. And again, we've got folks, our China folks we didn't bring in now. It's just, even though China is much more open in many ways, they still use caution about talking and things like that. So we can't share about that. We may get some other reports from other parts of the world. So Eric, real quick, Eric McCoy, as he wants you to know, not Eric Miller. Go ahead, Eric. What are you guys doing?
Well, I've been the last 3 years. One of the main things I've been doing is teaching at some Bible schools, different preaching opportunities. One thing I was really blessed with this past year was to be able to involved in the super typhoon you may have heard about, the largest typhoon in the world.
Yeah.
Had to go in seven times doing relief work there.
Yeah, I saw some of the pictures and videos. That was amazing.
So I just was really blessed to make some great connections there and help some families and pastors get their lives back in order. And now I'm, again, doing some more teaching and preaching and here in the city.
When you see devastating needs like that, which you all were exposed to on one level or another, knowing people in the Philippines here, it's overwhelming, but when you help one life at a time, you really feel that, can't you?
Oh, definitely.
Yeah, all right. Eric, not McCoy, but Miller. So what are you principally involved with?
We've been planting a church the last 8 years. We have a feeding program. We feed about 120 kids Monday through Friday. And we take trips to Japan a couple times a year, missions trips to Japanese and Filipino churches.
Neat. And the feeding program, was that something you planned on doing when you came to the Philippines, or it was birthed once you got here?
Yeah, it started way after we've been here. We came here 11 years ago, but we started a feeding program 3 years ago.
All right, Tony, lean in here. And what are you and your wife doing here now?
We're involved with pioneering a work called Hope for All Children with Mike Bailey and several other missionaries and the team here. And so predominantly, I'm involved with helping develop the land and also working on with feeding programs.
God, so develop the land for an orphanage or for just
orphanage
for
a feed? And also, it's 35 acres, so we're developing a farm as well to provide for the orphanage and for the community around, really using it as an open door to bring the gospel into this island.
All right, Mike?
Yes, sir.
What are you principally involved with here? We got to get you to speak up. Somehow you're more soft-spoken than I realized.
I work with Tony and other missionaries and nationals. We work with a foundation, a ministry called Hope for All Children, and it's focused on four areas of great need in this generation.
Which are?
It's the malnourished, the children that are facing abortion, it's trafficked children, and the orphaned.
Mm. All right, Crystal. Have you been here now? What are your principal areas of involvement?
Yeah, I work with the Hope for All Children team, and I'm overseeing the restoration ministry for Hope for All Children. So we're getting ready to open a house of restoration for young girls that have been rescued from human trafficking.
Mm. Yeah, we had Simon Arkley, whom you all know, another of our grads, with his wife, Aletha. And Simon was on talking about just some of the stats, some of the horrors of human trafficking, but it's just so extraordinary, you know, around the world. It's just epidemic around the world. And the thing that's most striking to me is being in our ministry school in Pensacola or in Concord, North Carolina, I know that you get a passion to go to the lost. I know you get a passion to plant churches, to raise up ministry schools, to see people set free. But the degree that God's laid it on your hearts, in Ukraine as well, and Tanzania and other countries, to pour into the poor and the hurting and the needy, it just blows us away. I mean, something God dropped in your heart. We come back. It's you've got questions, we've got answers. Time to turn the tables on me right here in the Philippines, a special broadcast today on The Line of Fire.
Change the world. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire, coming your way with a live, well, not a live audience. This is part a great radio, not audience, but it's studio, a guest, great group of radio guests. Come on, from the Philippines. Yeah, I mean, normally when we broadcast from my studio, we're set up with my mic and two other mics. So we maybe get four other people in there and kind of leaning back and forth or sharing mics and stuff. But here we've got a makeshift studio set up in the Philippines. All right, guys, since I've just arrived after like 40-something hours travel, do I seem jet-lagged?
No.
All right, just we got to keep the legend going, you know, the whole story here. So we're doing a special edition of You've Got Questions, We've Got Answers from the Philippines. I promised you a special broadcast. I've been asking questions of our missionaries here, and we've got folks that have come from a number of different countries to join with us for a Southeast Asian retreat. We've got five of our fire leaders have come over from the States, but who's got a question? Your time to ask. So if you've got a question, just needs hands raised. All right, Tony, lean in with your question. Go ahead.
Yes, Dr. Brown. Just different men and women of God that we've heard of in history that were in ministry maybe for seasons of time, and then there was a moment in their time that really catalyzed them into what we know that they're in today or were at the end of their life. And I was just wondering if there was a moment in your time like that where really transformed your ministry or your walk with the Lord.
Yeah, there have been a few key times in terms of like sudden promotion or expansion, but always I'm doing the things that I always felt I was called to do. In other words, if the people I was reaching, if that was a much smaller number with much smaller impact, in my heart, it was still part of something much bigger because of a sense of destiny and calling. But there have been several key things. Obviously, there were the foundations laid in the early years in the Lord. But then when I was 11 years in the Lord and finishing up my doctoral dissertation, as I've often shared, although I was a committed believer, definitely had left my first love in many ways, and God began to convict me and show me that I put, you know, I was getting academically and theologically proud and spoke to me that he was going to send an outpouring to the church I was in, got hold of me, the Spirit fell there. So that was dramatic. And then I was thrust forth after that, and that's when God began to speak to me about a revival that was going to touch the world that I would get to be part of. So then there was years of crying out and praying and seeking God and certain doors opening and connections with Lennon Ravenhill and David Wilkerson and so on. And then, of course, Brownsville Revival, and people came, friends that I had from Long Island from earlier years, they came and they sat with me in my office. They said, Mike, you told us that. You told us this was going to happen. You said this was going to happen, and you know, you're going to be in the midst of this. So it was something that I'd known for years, that I'd sensed for years, that I'd prayed and fasted about for years. And then in the late 90s, I started getting stirred with the theme of Jesus Revolution. Some of you were there when it started rising in my heart that more of the same was only going to produce more of the same, and that something more radical and revolutionary had to happen, beginning with the church. And along with that, God began to lay on my heart that I was supposed to be a voice of revolution on national talk radio. I mean, I've got journal entries going back, some cases almost 20 years, that I was journaling it and feeling like God was saying it. Not that I was supposed to lift a finger to make it happen. I didn't even know how to do that. So in just the last few years, we've had another one of those explosions. So it's kind of periodic. What I've seen is that there'll be something burning. You agonize over it. You feel it. You can't live without seeing this breakthrough. People touch, lives change, something happening. And it doesn't happen. Then you even question, did you really hear God? Or maybe you exaggerated or something. And then it happens. Let's just say you're impacting people on a level two. And now you're suddenly impacting people on level five. And then after a while, maybe it goes back to four or something. And then you're burning again. And then it's kind of like this jump. The sudden jump, but it all comes. It may look like it's sudden, but it's almost like for any of your wives here who've had babies, okay, you're watching day by day by day by day, and the change is imperceptible. But if someone hasn't been around for 9 months, whoa, you're pregnant. You look like you're ready to have a baby any day. That's often how it happens. It's little by little by little, and then sudden explosions of some kind take place. Another question. Go ahead.
When we were just in Japan, we felt some of the strongest presence of the Lord that
I've felt since Pensacola, the revival time.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't understand why sometimes God, his presence is so strong at different times. Is that an indication that he's wanting to do something more there, or why does he seem to do that some places than he does in others?
Yeah, great question. Sometimes it is a sign that people have been praying, fasting, crying out. I remember preaching somewhere many years ago, and God just breaking through dramatically. Well, the church had done a 40-day fast before I got there. You know, nothing different in me, but different ones had fasted a day leading up to it. Sometimes it's that. Sometimes God's moving in a region, and you just walk into it, and churches seem to be revived and touched. Other times, it's just an encounter with God's goodness. You know, sometimes I can just be walking through an airport and have some worship music on in my earphones, and suddenly I'm just overcome with a sense of the love of God and the goodness of the Lord. But for me, if I'm in an area that's a difficult area, like Japan, where there's been great outpouring in China on the one side and Korea on the other side, and so little happening there over the years, to me, I would take that as real encouragement that something's happening, and the presence of God makes all the difference. Yeah. You can minister to one person with the presence of God and have the greatest joy and sense of satisfaction, and minister to 10 million without that sense of his presence. You know, so that's what makes the difference. And if that happens, to me, that's encouragement. And sometimes it's just, if others are experiencing it the same way, something's going on. If it's just something in your life, it's just that encounter with the love of God. Since we referenced Brownsville a couple of times, Mike, when you came to Pensacola, what year was that?
1998.
What was the condition of your life as far as being a lost person at that point?
I was lost from birth.
All right. Well, we joined together on that, but then you lived it out. You lived it out.
At the point in time that I went to Brownsville, I was 22 years old, and I had lived a life of addiction, lived a life of sin.
You were married?
No, yeah, I was married.
Married, okay.
I was newly married.
Newly married. So you drinking heavily, was that the worst addiction or?
Drinking and minor drugs, yeah.
Okay. Why did you go to Pensacola?
There was a youth pastor. My wife grew up in church. She was just as far away from the Lord as I was. But when we had gotten married, this youth pastor began to reach out to us. And he would just love on us. He'd love on us and invite us to go places with the youth. And one of the places that he had just come back from was Brownsville, Pensacola, where God was pouring out his spirit. And he invited us to go stay at a beach house for a week with the youth. And the only catch was we'd be going to church during that week.
All right. Now, you went in on a Tuesday night, was your first service. Now, Tuesday night, there may be 1,500 people in the building praying, but there was no preaching. It was just a prayer meeting. What happened to you at that prayer meeting?
When I walked through the door, I was actually walking through the door with my wife. Her hand was in my hand. And it was, one, to see that many people in the building with their voices lifted up, and it was just something to behold. But what happened with me, as soon as I walked through the door, I felt like just this waves of God's love and his mercy just began to sweep over me. I didn't have words to put to it. I didn't have an understanding of what I was feeling. But I knew for the first time in my life that I was feeling something that I had longed for my entire life. And as I felt the waves of God's presence and his love just washing over me, I began to weep right there in the foyer of the church.
Mm. Just the presence of God.
Yeah.
Amazing. So amazing.
Without anyone preaching to me, without a message being spoken that day, I knew the things in my heart that was separating me from the Lord. And so it was from that night forward that I knew my life was going to be changed. And it was throughout that week.
All right. Amazing. So you got basically born again, encountering the presence of God at a prayer meeting, then responded to a message, then came to the ministry school. I want to talk maybe not this broadcast, but another time, because we're all here. We got some time together about some hardships and obstacles that you've overcome. But I want to say this to everybody listening, the folks sitting in the room here. If you just tuned in We're 10 of us crowded into my hotel room with a makeshift radio studio that we set up in Davao in the Philippines. We've got folks serving in the Philippines and other nations here. They really are world changers. They've had things to overcome. We've gotten the prayer requests. We've stayed with them through difficult, challenging times, and they are overcomers. And I want to emphasize this to you. Every single one of you, if you set your heart to do the will of God, there will be obstacles. There will be challenges. There will be times when you question things and you're really hit and it takes the wind out of your sails. But here are people who've persevered and have been on the field now, not just for a couple of months. They're going for it. They're making a difference, and lots of lives are being changed. History is being rewritten because people said, "Lord, here I am. Send me." We'll be right back.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, I cannot believe an hour, not yet, but almost an hour has gone flying by here in the Philippines, in Davao. So once again, from our studio here, I wonder what folks are thinking in the next rooms, the adjoining rooms. But we've come over, five leaders from Fire in the States, and we've come over for a regional retreat of our missionaries. We have our largest single team in the Philippines, but we've had folks come in from as far away as Ukraine, Tanzania, and the Philippines is a pretty scattered place. How many islands here in the Philippines?
7,000.
7,000. Wow, I thought it was like 3,000.
7,100.
7,100. And you've counted every one of them? No? All right. So it's a special edition of You've Got Questions, We've Got Answers. And I just want to say this, friends. The radio broadcast is the hub for me of what we do, because I get to be a voice 5 days a week across the country, 2 hours a day. You may get a half hour or an hour or 2 hours, but 2 hours a day across the country. And this is a voice that I get to speak, but it's just the tip of the iceberg of the larger ministry that's going on, be it Jewish outreach, be it moral cultural reformation, be it stirring the church for revival and equipping, and world missions. It's something that God has graciously allowed us to be part of, and through the revival in our ministry school, to birth a missions movement that is really making a tremendous impact around the world. And again, I want to remind you that the people that God is using are regular human beings. Anybody here ever get tired?
Yes.
Yes.
Hungry?
Yes.
Discouraged?
Yes.
Bad attitude?
Yes.
Bad hair day?
Yes.
Is this bad day?
Yes.
All right, just regular folks. All right, and Sierra's 16, you're the youngest. Who's the oldest in here? Kevin? Trent? Trent, how old?
42.
42. Oh, man, 42 years old. Oh, to be 42 again. But folks, just going for it. We've got some single ladies here. We've got married men here. We've got folks going for it together, and God's using them in amazing ways. Remember, God only has human beings to work through.
Amen.
So these are people who said, "Lord, here I am." And when they went out and started out, there's vision in their heart, but what it's grown into has astounded, amazed all of us. And real quick, if Jesus delivered you from something when he saved you, aside from deliverance of sin and being slaves to self, real quick, what did he deliver you from?
Drug addiction.
Drug addiction.
Drug addiction.
Spirit of mockery and depression.
Whoa.
Crystal meth, alcohol, tobacco, you name it. Yeah, about everything.
Lust and anger.
Anger.
Alcohol.
Anger and suicidal tendencies.
You've been raised in the faith, so you're just a little saint, right? All right. It is Friday. You've got questions. We've got answers. So we're having some fun with our missionaries here, and they're asking me some questions, whether it's a Bible question or a personal life or a ministry question. So who's next? All right, go ahead.
All right, in the last segment, you mentioned that there's a season in your life when your love for the Lord grew cold. What advice would you give us as missionaries who are out in the field serving the Lord every day that would just help us never allow that to happen to our lives.
Yeah, the great challenge when you're doing the work of the Lord, as the old saying goes, that we're so busy with the work of the Lord that we neglect the Lord of the work. And those of you who've been close to me or walked with me over the years know that I push hard, you know, joyfully and kind of, you know, overachieve in that respect. And there's an adrenaline with that. There is, God moves on me to write, I'm stirred. God moves on me to speak, I'm stirred. I love doing radio. But that does not take the place of intimacy. So I was a committed Christian. When I talk about leaving my first love, I was a committed Christian. I was committed to following Jesus. We had refugees from Southeast Asia living in our home. You know, we took in a baby and a mom from the States to live with us. We were active in many ways. We tried to live sacrificially to help the poor. I stood up as a witness in my grad school for Jesus. But something was different. Something was very different. And it, to me, it's the ongoing great challenge to be so busy doing God's work that you neglect intimacy with Him. And I was at a meeting where a spiritual son of mine was speaking the other day, and he talked about, he noticed getting up in the morning, and he does a lot of blogging and writing online, that he was more interested in how many responses to his articles and than he was just in communing with the Lord. And I've often been convicted of that to this day, that I'm more excited about God doing something or a breakthrough than I'm excited about Him. And you need to ask yourself, am I finding my delight in the Lord? Is the joy of the Lord my strength? Is intimacy with Him the foundation of my life? Or am I a hard worker? All of you are hard workers. I mean, you're missionaries, you're hard workers, you're pioneers. And it's a trap we can fall into because you're committed, you're serious, you're going for it. And yet there's a shift that takes place. And it's something that I have to focus on to this day, because of my tendency to just push, and live on the adrenaline of that spiritual push. Someone else with a question. Okay, back to you.
Okay, yeah. I have a question about ministry, because in the Ukraine, control is a big issue, and a lot of leaders that we work with are really controlling. Like, pastors will be controlling of everyone in their church, and I'm just wondering what, you know, it's not anything I've ever seen in America. It's a whole different level of every question has to go through them. They say yes or no, you can do it or you can't do it. So what is your advice on how to work with that type of person?
Yeah, what you have to do is do your best to major on the majors and overlook the other things as much as you can. And part of it's cultural. You know, I joke with my friends in Italy that the main leadership models they found for the church were the Pope or the Mafia. Now, the current Pope may be setting a little different example, but a lot of it's cultural, you know, with Ukraine and communist background and different and the one man rule and the iron fist and stuff. And pastors who may mean well do that. So I would try to work within that as much as possible and just look the other way and smile and say, okay, it's a little frustrating, but we'll work with that. If it becomes contrary to the gospel so that it's hindering the work, then you may have to just kind of go outside the camp with a few others of like heart, even if it's not as influential or prestigious. So you work with it as much as you can. When it becomes overbearing to the point that it hinders the work, then at that point, you just have to respectfully step away. But in all circumstances, never breed division, as you know, or speak against those, even if they are making mistakes. All right, friends, we are out of time. If you have not taken advantage of something, we did this yesterday, doing it again today. My mini book on the problem of the Holocaust, A Redemptive Answer to the Slaughter of 6 Million Jews, one that ultimately points to Jesus. You'll find it a great read and a great outreach tool. Jews for Jesus has republished this as a mini book. It's yours for your gift of any size. So stand with us as you're able. Be generous, and the smile of the Lord will be on you. Call 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. It's not available online, so you need to call that number, 1-800-278-9978. My bottom line today, God is looking for people. When we say yielded vessels, it doesn't just mean seminary grads or the elite spiritual ones. He's looking for people like you to say, send me, Lord, here I am. One more shout out from the Philippines.